We're going to find out through this book and specifically through these verses that we're going to read, what really causes greatness? What actually contributes to greatness? And where is there greatness that you might not be looking? Amen? And when you find this greatness that you haven't been looking for or have not been identifying or have not been recognizing, that's how you're going to begin to understand how greatness really happens and how God uses people and circumstances to create the opportunity for greatness. And then we're going to understand what should you do when your opportunity comes. Oh, because it's going to come. The question is, what are you going to do when the opportunity comes? Some of you are running from the opportunity. Some of you, the opportunity has come and it's knocking. And you're not answering the door. You're hiding in another room. You're faking like you're not home. Mm-hmm. Some of your opportunity is already there. And finally, when you come to really understand what creates greatness, what contributes to greatness, hopefully you're going to find out what greatness looks like, and you'll understand that it's right and it's appropriate for God, through me, to challenge you, each and every one of you, to be great. Is there anybody here that's not up to that? Not up for that? Because I'm challenging you, each and every one of you, from the youngest to the oldest, from the least experienced in the Lord to the most experienced. Don't care what kind of job you do or plan to do. My expectation, if you're under my voice today, is that you will be great. Are you okay with that? Yes. All right, so let's learn about greatness. Now, Esther is easy because her name is on the book. It's easy to look at greatness when somebody has a spotlight on them. It's easy to look at greatness when the marquee has their name up there. It's easy to find greatness when it's obvious, when it's out there, when it's publicized. But what I want to tell you and what I want to show you and teach you today is that if there is no Mordecai, there is no Esther. Now, you may not know who Mordecai is, but after today, you will. Esther is the one who gets all that credit. Understandably so, for saving her people from annihilation, from being there with the king and using her influence and her beauty for the benefit of her people. But without Mordecai, there is no Esther. And anyone that you see that you consider great or that the world considers great, they didn't get that way on their own. They didn't get that way on their own. There's some greatness behind the greatness you see. But that's the greatness you usually ignore or miss and fail to recognize. That's the greatness that many of you are called to, and yet you miss it because you're looking past that. You're trying to look at the greatness that God has called someone else to, and you're missing the greatness that he's calling you to because you have the wrong picture of greatness, the wrong definition of greatness, and I'm going to give you an alternative definition today. Amen? Amen. So now, Mordecai, you're going to learn who Mordecai is through the word. Let's go to chapter 2. Now, remember, what we're reading here is what we call a historical book. And the setting here is, again, we had the Babylonian Empire, which is when the Jews were first taken away from their land into exile for their 70-year punishment. And that led to the Medo-Persian Empire, who conquered Babylon. And so now the Medes and the Persians are dominant. And that's the setting that we have. So we look at chapter 2, and we're just going to look at verses 5 through 11 so that you can see what I'm talking about. It reads, "Now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew," this is Mordecai, "whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away." That's basically what I've been describing to you. "And he brought up Hadassah," that is Esther, we know her by Esther, "his uncle's daughter. For she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. So I'm going to actually take this step by step. I'm going to try not to hold you too long, but I want to stop right here. And I'm actually going to begin to build this case for you about greatness. It's easy to understand that Queen Esther, because she's in the palace, because she has the crown on her head, because she has the influence, because she has the power, because she has the spotlight, because she has the name in the Bible. It's easy to say that Queen Esther was great. But there is no Queen Esther if there is no Mordecai. So beginning to understand the greatness of Mordecai. Now this, obviously, all the credit goes to God, but God's working through people. Mordecai did not have to take on this young woman as his own daughter. This is his cousin. He's obviously much older than she is, but he's taken her on, and he did not have to. This is a sacrifice. This is a stepping up to the plate that many people would not want to take on. And yet it is part of greatness. In verse 8, it says, "So it came to pass when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also unto the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the women." So the king is looking for a new wife. I can't tell you the whole story, but he got rid of the old one because she didn't want to please him. She didn't come when she was called, and that was the end of her. And so he's looking for a new wife. And verse 9, it says, "And the maiden pleased him." This is Esther pleasing the king. "And she obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and seven maidens, which were meet to be given to her." So he gave her seven women who would take care of all of her needs out of the king's house. "And he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women. Esther had not showed her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not show it." Here is another thing that Mordecai did as he is building this greatness, making this greatness possible. First, he took her on as his own. Now, that's not noticed. You could easily miss that. But he took on a responsibility that he didn't have to. Now he's using wisdom, imparting wisdom into her by telling her that you're going into this house, your beauty's going to pay off, but do not tell them that you're a Jew. She could have been all as beautiful she wanted to be if she had divulged the fact that she was a Jew. The greatness that we now know would never have been known. So Mordecai, again, in the background, is pumping into this young woman the ingredients, the necessary requirements for greatness. Now let's go over to chapter 3. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 6. What are we doing here? We're trying to paint the picture. We're trying to expose you to these elements, these ingredients for greatness, so that we don't just get stuck in the obvious. When somebody tells us to go read the book of Esther, and you come back and tell them about the book of Esther, all you know is Esther. That's not what we want. Let's look at verses 1 through 6. It says, "After these things..." Now, first of all, let me quickly tell you, what are these things? Because you won't understand it if I don't tell you. The king's life was threatened. Some men were conspiring to kill the king. And Mordecai heard about the plot, and he got the word to Esther, and through Esther, the plot was foiled. And that's what has just happened. "After these things, did King," let's just call him Xerxes, that's easier because that's really who he is, he promoted Haman. Now notice something. Mordecai is the one that actually just saved the king's life, but he's promoting somebody else. We won't be able to fully cover that today, but there's a whole lot up in there, I'll just tell you. So he's promoting Haman, another gentleman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite. That's also important, but not for today, but it is important that he's an Agagite, and advanced him and set a seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed down and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow. Does this sound familiar? We give a lot of credit to people who would not bow down, but we don't notice Mordecai. I'm here to tell you about Mordecai today. He would not bow down and reverence him. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, why do you transgress? Why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not to them, so he would not listen to them, he would not answer them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. So Mordecai has told Esther not to tell anybody in the king's house that she's a Jew, to protect her, to give her the opportunity for greatness, but he is telling people that he is a Jew. Verse 5, and when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. And he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone. He wanted to kill him himself alone. But knowing that he was a Jew, he decided to kill all Jews. And this is the backdrop. This is the situation. Now we see the nature of the problem. So there's a problem to be solved. And therefore, there's the opportunity for what? Greatness. All right, let's go on over to verse 4. And we're going to get to our text. Now, verses 1 through 7, we won't read completely. But we will at least touch on it so that you can get the backdrop here. Verse 1 reads, when Mordecai perceived all that was done. Now, what he's talking about here is there is the royal edict to kill all of the Jews because Haman has convinced the king to actually issue this edict that all the Jews were to be killed. He perceived this, and so he went over, and the bottom line is he got word to Esther. And Esther's maids let her to know that her uncle, or we can call it her cousin, but he's more like an uncle, that he's outside the gate, and he, along with others, are in sackcloth and ashes. They're upset. They're frustrated. They're unhappy because they're about to be killed. They set a certain day to kill all of the Jews. And so Esther was wondering. She said, well, let me get him some clothes and clothe him. I don't want him in sackcloth and ashes. But he refused to take the clothes. And so he realized that she did not understand the enormity of the situation. Here she is, queen. But she doesn't even know that there's been an edict to kill all of her people. And so that gets us to verse 7. And Mordecai told him, this is his answer to her, all that had happened unto him and all the sum of the money, this is what Haman had promised to pay in order to have the right to kill all of the Jews and to destroy them. So now Queen Esther knows the whole of the situation. Now we can start to actually read our text. Let's start at verse 8. Also, he gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given to Shushan to destroy them and to show it unto Esther and to declare to her and to charge her, and this is where her opportunities for greatness really come. Now that she has the situation, she has it in writing, it is to charge her that she should go to the king and make supplication unto him and to make a request for her people. So what is he asking her to do? He's asking her to go into the king and to ask the king to spare her people. Is that an unreasonable request? It doesn't sound so. But with any opportunity for greatness, there is risk, there is sacrifice. And we begin to see that as we read through these next verses. It says, and Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again, Esther spoke to Hatak. They're going back and forth through this gentleman or this person, and gave this command to Mordecai. Here's her response. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court, basically come into the king's presence, who is not called, there is one law of his to be put to death. So in other words, you could not come to the king unannounced. And if you did come to the king, even if you are the queen, you couldn't come to the king unannounced. And if you did, there is death for you unless he has mercy on you and holds out the golden scepter, and then you may remain alive. And she says, but I have not been called to come in unto the king for 30 days. So here it is. She is the queen. She is the most favorite one. She still can't come to the king until she is called. So far, is she great? Not really. She is in a position of favor, and she now has an opportunity for greatness, but she's not yet been shown to be great. Okay, in verse 12, it says, and they told to Mordecai Esther's words. And now we get into our key verses where our learning really comes from. It says, then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. So he's telling her, oh, okay, so now you're talking about the fact that you might die if you go to the king unannounced, but I'm telling you, all of your people are in jeopardy. All of your people are in jeopardy. And so you're thinking, now you've been in this house for so long, maybe you've forgotten who you are. You've been in this position for so long, maybe you think that this edict is not going to cover you. Oh, so you think all of the Jews are going to get killed, and because I've told you not to tell, you think it's going to miss you? That's what I'm hearing you say. She has an opportunity for greatness. She has an opportunity to influence the king and to save all of her people. And yet she shrinks from that opportunity. Why? Because she's gotten too comfortable. She's gotten too used to living the good life. And so while she's the only one positioned to make this difference, she refuses so far to do so. To be great, you must have opportunity and you must take initiative. There are those who would take the initiative. Mordecai would have happily gone to the king, but the king wouldn't have listened to him. She had opportunity, but did not have the guts yet to take the initiative. So just because you're bold, that's not good enough. You need opportunity. And just because you're in position is not good enough. You have to be willing to step up to the plate. You need both. Occasionally, they come in the same person. And in your own personal life, it will require both in the same person. You are in your position and you will be put in positions for a reason. Do you know why you are where you are? Do you know why you're on the job that you're on? Do you know why you have the position that you're in? Do you know why you're in the relationships that you're in? Do you know why? And do you know why challenges come into your midst? You may blame it on Satan, but guess what? These are often opportunities, especially if you didn't create them. Opportunities for you to press through the fear, press through the laziness, the malaise, press through the fact that you didn't see yourself as great, and to realize that God puts you in a position to make a difference. And when the situation, the fork in the road comes, the question is, what are you going to do? You're going to take the easy way out, or you're going to step into greatness? You are all called for greatness. You may say, because I say all of you should and can be great, you may think I've just cheapened the word. You may think that since I'm saying everybody sitting here, regardless of where you are in life or in God, that you are called to greatness. You may say, now that's not really great then. That's because you don't understand greatness if you think that. You don't realize what greatness really is. You've been brainwashed into thinking that greatness is whatever the world tells you greatness is. Greatness is whatever is on the marquee. Greatness is whatever is publicized. And yet greatness is all around you, and greatness is also in you if you'll let God pull it out. Now, so he tells her, you think that you're going to be let off the hook. That's what, oh, I see the problem. You think you're going to be all right, so you're willing to be selfish. Now, we can't be too hard on her. I mean, death is pretty intimidating, okay, if you're not ready to go. Now, let's see what he says here in verse 14. After he's told her, I see, so really, so you think that you're going to escape and all the other Jews will get killed. He says, for if thou altogether holds thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. Let's stop there for a moment. So if you don't step into that place of greatness, let me just get you straight. God's going to take care of his people. You don't know the plan. You're in position. You've been called to do something, but you don't realize God has a plan to take care of his people. He didn't let them get into trouble to leave them there. And you have an opportunity to be an instrument for that plan. You're shrinking from it, but don't get it twisted and think that it can't happen without you. Don't get it twisted, because it can and it will. So he says that enlargement and deliverance will arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. This is what will really happen. So you can either step out and take that risk, or you can face destruction later, because God put you there for a reason. And if you're not going to serve that purpose, guess what? Moving right along. You thought that you were doing well because you were beautiful. You thought you were doing well because you were so charming. You thought you were still in that position because you were so smart. You thought you were still in that position because you were better than everybody else. You thought all these things. Little did you know God put you there because he has something for you to do. And now he has come a calling. He's brought the situation to you. Are you going to step up to the plate? If you don't serve God's purpose, then what do you think is supposed to happen? So the Jews will be blessed another way, but thou and thy father's house will be destroyed. And this is where he sort of really lowers the boom. This is another place. Now, understand, I'm trying to paint a picture so you can understand the greatness of that's in Mordecai, that God is manifesting through Mordecai, because it's too easy for you to see Esther. He says, and who knows whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Had you considered, Esther, that you were put in this elevated place for such a time as this? Have you considered, Esther, even though you're afraid, even though you're shrinking from the situation, even though you don't want to try this hard thing, have you even considered that God called you to this place for this reason? So why are you put in a position of influence or authority? Why are you given the opportunity to be the decision maker where if you step out and make a sacrifice, somebody else will be blessed? Why do you think you were put in that position? Why do you think you have those resources? Why do you think you have that influence? When that situation is put in front of you, if you fail to do the good that you know you can and should do, if you're going to do that, then what's God to do with you? What's the point? He may as well put that favor, that influence, that resource, that capacity into someone else. So he says, first of all, let me just tell you this, that God's going to bless his people another way. And you will go from your elevated place to a very low place. And what? How do you know that God has not brought you to this very place for this very time? So this is the moment. This is the sentinel critical moment for Esther in her life. She's been lifted up. She's been put in this position. Mordecai has developed her. He's mentored her. He's educated her. He's given her wisdom. And what we didn't talk about is that he was outside the gate every day being worried about her, concerned about her. He sacrificed his life, dedicated his life to making sure that this girl actually thrived and was okay and fulfilled her destiny. So then Esther, verse 15, bade them, or called them, that returned to Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go into the king. which is not according to the law. So I'm going to break the law. I'm telling you now that you have challenged me this way. I will break the law. And if I perish, then that's fine. I will just perish. Now that sounds a little like Ruth, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. The difference is Ruth's life was not in jeopardy this way. This young woman has been challenged now by this man Mordecai, who God put into her life. She was a nobody, understand. She was just a little, not slave girl, but she's this girl in exile with people that have no power. And she had no parents. She's nobody. But Mordecai cared about her enough to take his resources and make this commitment to a child he did not have to. So he commits to her and he cares for her. He mentors her. And then he stands for God as an example, refusing to bow down to this man in obeisance, only to bow down to God. And now he does something else, something that we don't recognize often, something that we don't appreciate, something that we shun, something that we resent. He challenges her. She's got this opportunity. She's got this situation. She's in a unique position and skilled. Her beauty was there for a reason. And she has this opportunity for greatness, opportunity to make a difference. She didn't want to step up to the plate, but she had somebody that cared enough to challenge her. How do you feel about people who challenge you to be great? What kind of attitude do you have when people challenge you to be great? What kind of attitude do you have toward people that pull you out of your comfort zone? What kind of attitude do you have toward people that check you when you need to be checked? Here's an opportunity for your name to be on the marquee. But the coach that's trying to make you great, you hate them. You want the one that tells you you're great, you're beautiful, you're already wonderful. You're just inherently great. That's the one you want. You want the one to take your laziness and let it just be that way. You want the one that will let you cower in fear. You want the one that will not bother you and let you be afraid. That's the one you want. But Mordecai is not that kind of man. That's not the kind of greatness that he is manifesting. He challenges her. Not only does he tell her how it's really going to turn out, he says, how do you know you haven't been elevated to this place for such a time as this? And each and every one of you have been gifted. Each and every one of you are put in positions. Each and every one of you are going to have situations placed before you and opportunities for greatness. The question is, what are you going to do? That's really the question. Now, I'm going to give you, as we get ready to wrap up, I'm going to give you a definition for greatness. It may or may not be the same one that you're thinking of. I'm going to tell you that greatness is saying, doing, and being all that God made and called you for, despite the risks and the challenges. Without risks and challenges, there will be no greatness. So if you said you raised your hand and you want to be great, guess what? You're going to have to face some challenges. You're going to have to come out of that comfort zone. Greatness is saying, doing, and being all that God has made you and called you for, despite the risks and challenges. I'm not done yet. Giving up or risking all the trappings and comforts for yourself to do something for others that you are uniquely gifted and positioned to do. You all said you're willing to step up and be great. I'm going to say again, I need to contradict all of the pictures that you have that the world is giving you for greatness. It is saying, doing, and being all that God has called and made you for, despite the risks and the challenges. Giving up, or at least risking, all of the trappings and the comforts for yourself in order to do something for others that you are uniquely gifted and positioned to do. Now, with that definition, do you not understand how each and every one of us has the potential for greatness? There's somebody out there that needs what you have, and there's going to be a moment where you're going to have opportunity to actually step up to the plate and make a sacrifice. You're going to risk your own comfort and security. You're going to risk your own resources. You're going to risk your own favor for someone else. If all of what you're trying to accomplish, money, position, power, influence, is to help you and enlarge you, enlarge your territory, sound familiar? Guess what? You may call yourself great, but God won't. People may call you great, but God won't. This is the definition of greatness as God calls it. So what am I saying to you? I'm saying I want you to understand the situation that Esther is in and the opportunity that she has, and I want you to see how greatness is about to burst forth. But I also want you to see how that greatness came to be, because that's the part you miss. You're afraid to be great because all you see is the good part of greatness. But there's a whole lot that's behind greatness, and there's people behind great people. And I don't want you to see those people that coach, that care for, that sacrifice for, those who get the shine. I don't want you to see them as second-class citizens. I'm trying to tell you that is also greatness. Some of you don't feel so good about the roles that you play in life because you don't recognize greatness when you see it. I become mindful of the movie The Butler and how the son never understood for the majority of his life until later in his father's career that his father was a great man. His father took the position that he was in seriously, and he did it fully to the best of his ability with the right attitude all the way through. He did not envy any other man, nor his position, power, or resources. His son thought that greatness came through being bold and dastardly. He thought that was the only way to come through and pierce life and come out of it great. If that's your calling, do your thing. But God is trying to tell you that greatness is you being maximally you, seizing your opportunities, using the gifts he gave you. But all that's no good if you don't step up to the plate in those moments. All of it's no good. So when those moments come, if you're still stuck with, I can't work that hard, I don't want to sacrifice, I don't want the responsibility, I'm afraid to fail, I serve a little G God. If that's what you're packing, then it's no good. If that's all you have, it's no good. And so my challenge to you is to be great and to also recognize the greatness that's in the Mordecais of your life. Every one of you has had people that have sacrificed for you, that have done for you when they didn't have to do for you, that have coached you, counseled you, gave you wisdom, told you what to do, challenged you in the moments you needed to be challenged. If you don't appreciate those people, you're going to miss a lot of greatness. And if you don't listen to those people, if you don't respond to those people, you also will not manifest your own greatness in your life. Amen? Either way, God expects each and every one of us to be great. Will you accept the challenge? Will you accept the challenge? That's the question. And I don't know exactly who needed this the most, but somebody needed to hear this today. Somebody needed to understand that Mordecai is a great man. Somebody needed to understand that that person behind the scenes is just as great as the one whose name is on the marquee. Somebody needed to understand today that when the opportunities come, when that fork in the road comes for you, and God has predestined you to do something great for others, when he puts that challenge in front of you, Will you worry only about your own comforts? Will you only cower in fear and worry about failure? Will you fail to sacrifice? Or will you be willing to be great? From this day forward, you have no excuses. Each and every one of you can, should, and I hope will, manifest the greatness that God has predestined you for. Uniquely gifted you, not somebody else. There's no way out. He touched you. He imagined you. And then you became. So I encourage you to step up to the plate when those moments come.